If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Benjamin R. Harrison.
Ben, if it's okay with you, I would like to use our Marc Maron Open, inspired by Marc Maron's podcast, where he takes the first couple of minutes to monologue about whatever's on his mind.
Thank you for explaining that joke to me, Adam.
Yeah, I think... more and more people have been confused about that reference. We call it the Maron Open because that's what Marc Maron does on his podcast. And yeah. And I've been an admirer of his show for a long time.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Ben, we are just now getting back on the podcast horse after a long layoff. I've been out of town for a couple of weeks. And
sure
so
have.
Since getting back home and sort of returning to the administration of the pod, I just sort of read some feedback to our episode violations, the Troy episode, the Troy mind rape episode.
That was the episode that was most scary for us to do, I think, of any episode.
Yeah, I saw that this was one of our most listened to episodes ever.
Whoa.
I think it's top 10 even, and I don't know why that is, but I listened to it again. And I read all the favorable reviews, and I felt bad about that because I don't feel comfortable with taking the credit for being a good person in that way. Like, while I was away on vacation, I went back and listened to this episode, and by and large, I found it sober and unfunny. I thought we did a good job with it, with a difficult episode and a challenging scenario, but it made me think a lot about what we try to do, what I try to do personally on this show.
Right.
And it didn't feel like our show in a specific way.
Yeah.
And it felt scared in a way that I'm not proud of. Because I would like to consider myself, and I would like to consider you, brave, like comedically, like brave enough to make a bad joke, brave enough to take some shit on the internet about saying something awkwardly, and this is shit that we've taken before, for being inarticulate about something that we should be more sensitive about. And so what I'm trying to say here is, like, I really appreciate our viewers' ability to have this conversation about an episode like that with each other.
Yeah.
I am appreciative that they were grateful that we were able to do an episode like that without shitting all over ourselves and being awful about a difficult topic. But the thing I feel bad about is taking credit for being a good person, because I don't think that I personally deserve that kind of credit. Because, like, I didn't feel like I was deserving of any praise for being as safe as I was in that episode. And I've just thought a lot about that. And I don't know if you feel that way, the way I feel that way about that episode, or if this is just, like, way pod on pod, like, way too much pod on pod to even have a conversation like this in the open. But, like, what do you think?
I haven't thought about this quite as deeply as you have. But, I, like, in you bringing it up, one thing I'm thinking is I... noticed in myself that I was not nearly as engaged with the kind of, every time we put up an episode, there's always a couple of Reddit threads about it and a series of posts in the Facebook group about various things that come up on an app. And usually it's just kind of like yes anding the jokes and having fun with the thing that we had fun with. And I pretty much ignored the conversation about that episode. I think I kind of took a quick survey of it to make sure that we weren't like really hurting anybody, because I think that while we were careful, I still, you know, when we hit publish on that one, I was still, you know, wanted to make sure that we weren't putting something out there that was going to ruin anybody's day, because that's really not what we're about.
And I want to be clear that, like, I don't regret not hurting people's feelings. Like, that's not what it is at all. There's something...
Yeah, well, I think what I'm saying is, like, I kind of felt the same way. Like, I didn't want to go in and get my back patted, because I didn't feel like that was why we did it that way. You know, like, we got accused of making, quote, rape jokes and making light of child rape, which is not really something that we're about. And in my, you know, personal assessment of our jokes on that, I didn't think that we were doing a joke where the victim of a sexual assault was the butt of it.
Right.
Like the joke was that this show heavily implied sexual assault without realizing that that's what it was doing. Like, what a fucking bonehead move, and that's hilarious.
But also, like, the circumstance between two fake people in a fake future that could be deviant.
Yeah, we took a ton of shit for playing with that as a premise. And you can't record a podcast and put it out there and then control how everybody experiences it. And I'm sure that there were people that experienced that and had an authentic, like, negative reaction to those jokes. I think there was a lot of concern trolling going on when people would sling shit at us online, and maybe we felt a little gun shy about getting more of that type of trolling in the violations episode.
Right. I mean, it should be very clear by now to you and everyone else that, like, we don't rehearse or pre-talk about how we do this show. We just get into it, and that includes our opening. Like, I sprung this on you.
Well, I think one thing
because I didn't want us to overthink a conversation like this. I want it to be true. And there was something about the violations episode that felt less than true for us. And I'm having a hard time describing it any more than that.
Well, I think that a lot of the comedy in our show comes out of, like, twanging on corny shit that happens in this TV series. Like, it's a show that we love, but there's a lot of corny ass shit that goes on.
Yeah.
And it's hard to gleefully twang on an episode that's as sincere an exploration of a very troubling subject as that.
Yeah.
By contrast, when Picard and Wesley have a weird interaction, it's very funny, you know?
Yeah, totally. So,
I mean, like, one thing I thought about in putting that one up was, like, I wanted to kind of warn people going in, because I know that the subject matter can be, like, really upsetting for some people. And I'm like, I don't want somebody to put our show on while they're, like, commuting to work or something and have a fucking meltdown because we were assholes about something that's really serious.
Yeah, absolutely. That is something that is inarguable for us. Like, that's not our way or our brand.
I don't regret our choices on that episode, but I know what you mean. Like, it didn't quite feel like, I just don't know, like, how we bring ourselves to just have a joke fest about something like that. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know, like, if there's a solution to that problem.
I'm not advocating for a joke fest about the mind rape episode. I guess by saying all of this, I'm also preparing us for the episode today, which is, like, very clearly the transgender allegory episode of the show. And so, like, I have full confidence that we are going to be considerate and good and mindful, but I also think we're going to be funny.
Why start now?
I think we can put together a good and funny show about this subject.
Well, Adam, I know that you're going to be funny, and, you know, I have about a 50-50 batting average, so here's hoping we come out on top.
All right, season 5, episode 17. Oh, this one's called The Outcast, Ben.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
We open the episode with Worf back at work, standing at the back of the horseshoe. He doesn't even have a stool to sit on. He's returned right to work.
So presumably this is like 6 months later.
Full recovery.
So the entrepreneur is helping the Genai find a missing shuttlecraft of theirs. And the like opening captain's log, Picard is setting the stage and works in that the Genai are androgynous, kind of like when somebody like unnecessarily works the race of somebody into a story that they're telling. Like, you know, I was at the grocery store and there was this black guy in front of me in line, and he asked me to like hold his place in line, and then took 5 minutes to go find whatever he was running to go get.
Yeah, like he sort of Thanksgiving dinners the description of totally. The scenario.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Grandpa. Like, that is not germane to the story.
Yeah, the guy was just looking for butter. His ethnic background has nothing to do with this fucking story.
Like, Picard's going on and on about the Korean War, the Forgotten War. Like, we get it. We've seen the medals.
Well, I think they have like a spot in space that they're pretty confident it's going to be, and they launch a probe and the probe disappears. And we've talked about this a little bit in the last episode, Adam. You know, losing a probe is no good. You want a flared base so that it doesn't slip in, because once it slips in, there's no getting it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you got to go to an emergency room.
Yeah. And, you know, explaining how this happened is never fun, you know?
You end up on those fun medical story Reddit threads.
Yeah, or like
stories from nurses.
Yeah, or like a trade paperback of early stories from Vice magazine.
You do not want to make that edition of The Lancet.
Well, the Genai are all hanging around, and they like... this is like one of those races where you're like, are these guys like in the Federation? Or are they just pals with the Federation? What's
Federation
the deal?
Federation adjacent.
Yeah. Like they don't seem to be in the Federation, because it's like one of those, we're learning all about these people. You know, it's one of those planets where like, this is the only example of these people we'll ever encounter. Like they're not like the Klingons, where they're like colonizing a region of space. They're not the Cardassians. They're not like a power of any kind. They're not even like chaotic bros where they're like, oh yeah, you see one on a starship vaping away every so often. They're just a one-off.
Like, if we're just going to make an alien, mm-hmm. we can make this alien look however we like. And so to make a genderless alien androgynous is a choice. Like, you
right.
could make an alien that's genderless that looks like a Klingon or looks like chaotic bro.
Right.
So... it was interesting to me the way that they world built the Genai. Like, they all have a little bit of head loaf. They all look like they cut their own bangs.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but they're also very unemotive in a strange way. Like, and mm-hmm. why? And that's a choice too, right?
Yeah, they do. Like, they don't use like contractions. They kind of have a data like lilt in their speech.
To what degree is gender tied to emotion? Or appearance? Like, they're making pretty specific choices here that serve to illustrate a transgender allegory.
Yeah, so transgender is like the thing that my mind leaps to here. I think in the era that this was shot, it was much more about like, what if it was, you know, it's like what if gay people were the huge majority and they discriminated against straight people as badly as straight people discriminate against gay people.
Right. And like at the time that this show was made, like gender and sexuality were conflated in right. in this way.
Exactly. And it's so amazing this moment in history to be revisiting this and have it feel just as relevant to the trans battle that's taking place. Like
right,
all
right.
of these people that have come so far on their understanding of sexuality are have learned no lessons from that when it comes to the gender discussion.
right. And you see it in the conversations that the crew has amongst themselves about the Jannar. Like,
yeah.
everyone has a moment of grandpa at Thanksgiving, pretty much.
Yeah. The first one to have such a moment is Riker, because he says that...
For 2 days, I've been trying to construct sentences without personal pronouns. Now I give up. What should I use? It? To us, that's rude.
And they're like, you can't use... You got to use a gender-neutral pronoun or nothing at all, and... There is no gender-neutral pronoun in English, which is, you know, really dates this, right? Like, we have gender-neutral pronouns. Like, there are people that go they, them. There's, like, the XE, which I've read a million times, but I don't know how to pronounce.
Right.
There's lots of things that could be done with this, but, like, that, like, this is, that's one thing that this script, like, completely misses on is the pronoun thing.
Riker is the proxy for the viewer in this case, because Riker is the one that is learning mm-hmm. along with the viewer about how this works.
The other thing he's learning is that Soren, this Jannai who has become friendly with him, is a dope-ass pilot, and they're going to attempt to modify a shuttle to go figure out the shape of this weird area of space that they're probe and earlier the Jannai shuttle disappeared into.
Yeah, it's called null space.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't give us much information on how this works. The way that null space presents is like it's just sort of anti-space, right?
Yeah, it's I guess they're saying it's some sort of accidental byproduct of the way their solar system formed, but yeah, I mean it's like...
Did you find this scientific concept an awkward sidecar to the gender conversation being had this episode? Because I sure did.
They're just as unsure how to go about discussing null space as they are gender.
Right. That's exactly where I went.
That's fun. They're doing their science on this, figuring out how to rescue the missing Jannai shuttle. And meanwhile, you know, Riker and Soren are getting to know each other better, and they're having a lot of, like, birds and bees type conversations about their different species.
Commander, tell me about your sexual organs.
Because the first thing you do in a work relationship is talk about sex, right?
Well, you know, like, certain office environments are different from others. And
that's true.
I feel like if you're on a starship, like, that's got to come up, right? Like, what if you're that guy from Undiscovered Country who's got his genitals in his knees?
That was not his knee.
You know, you're working on a starship, and somebody's like, hey, can you, like, kneel over there and, you know, I don't know, like, look under that bulkhead for something? And like, no, I can't kneel.
Not everybody keeps their genitals in the same place, Captain.
The guy's going to have to put down a towel before doing any basic plumbing, and you're going to want to know why.
Yeah.
Soren's really curious about how sexuality works with humans, and Riker is pretty happy to discuss it, like in sort of a cool dad kind of way. He is not ashamed to describe his genitals to someone or explain how procreation works. Like, he's a little bit like he has Riker eyes about being asked the question, but he's not awkward about it.
Yeah, he's like, wait a second, are there some
sort of
commercials
amused.
About to come or
yeah, but, like he is praying to be able to explain this off camera.
Yeah,
so Riker goes down to the Jannai homeworld surface and is like doing a little PowerPoint presentation on null space, and basically, like, does the ink blot test to the room. Like, the thing on screen is a labia.
I want you to look at these and tell me what you see.
That's a pussy. Lady's pussy.
Good.
And I laughed out loud at this scene. Like, what are you doing, Will? You gotta get these slides checked. Have someone else look at the PowerPoint show before you present to these people.
This part between the asshole and the pussy.
It was horrifying.
Yeah. Well, I think that stuff is probably pretty like well established on the entrepreneur, you know, Riker having some kind of obviously sexual stuff thrown into every presentation. It's like a box art for a Disney film. There's always going to be a boner or something hidden in there.
It's like when you set up a new editing project, like all your folders are templatized to a certain degree. Like
yeah.
his Riker Omega 3 PowerPoint presentation always begins with something labial.
Yeah. And it just like goes right over the heads of these Janai, you know?
Yeah.
It's great.
So they come up with this plan, right? Like, this thing is dangerous. And they know it's dangerous because they lost a shuttle and a probe in there. So what they need to do is map it out. They gotta find out its boundaries. And the way to do that is to hop in an upgraded Previa shuttle.
Yeah.
And this set piece is awesome. It's like it's not quite the size of a school bus, but not a minibus size. It's like a cozy middle.
Sporty flush halogen headlamps, beautifully curved tinted glass, and a smart protective side molding give the Previa an exciting aerodynamic look that definitely sets it apart.
Totally.
It's a big Previa.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Like, this is a great set piece.
They even put like a bunk bed kind of off center and foreground to really like show off how fancy this new Prev is.
It's on a little car show turntable that's like slowly slowly rotating.
Yeah, he's bragging on it a little bit. He's like, yeah, she'll do 0.5 past light speed. She's got most of these don't have armaments, but this one's got some special modifications.
Soren's like, is that a V8? Riker's like, fuck yeah.
V8, fuck that. It's a fucking V12, baby.
Yeah, so they hop in the shuttle and they start. Riker's like, so I think we should probably start you off with a simulation. And Soren's like, no, like I've been flying since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Soren's like, look, I should fly by myself. Like, I can't ask you to do this. This is a dangerous mission. And Riker's like, well, why don't I be your wingman? I'll be your wingman anytime. And so they decide to fly the mission together.
Yeah, it's like an even more erotic Top Gun episode.
As
if there wasn't enough Eros in the premise of Top Gun. Star Trek is upping the ante with this one. And you know, like, they keep getting closer and closer. Like I think they fly an initial mission and they're kind of doing some mapping and they like clip a curb with their, you know, like dents the hub on one of their wheels and they have to drive back into the garage and get it fixed up. But in fixing it up, like they have like a pretty intense, like, you know, they're down under the dashboard machining on something, and Soren essentially comes out to Riker in this scene, right?
I find you attractive.
What she confesses is that in their society, like...
And if it were known on my planet, it would be very dangerous for me.
There are people that feel a strong connection to a gender, and they're maligned by the genderless cultural dominance or whatever.
Yeah, and the example she uses is like a really... like contemporarily terrifying story of basically like a Mike Pence reprogramming camp for people who feel a specific gender identity. Like she talks about this kid she went to school with and like they identified as a certain way and then they were sent away to a camp and then they came back all reprogrammed and
yeah, and, like 1984, like end of the book kind of deal where they've kind of lost their joie de vivre or whatever.
You'll be one of us soon.
Yeah, pretty dark.
It's rough. I mean, and that really describes a real thing that happens to real people still in 2017.
Yep.
Which is fucked up. And I mean, like, this is also kind of a revelation because, like, they've been hanging, right? Like, they had a hang in 10
soup?
Forward. Yeah. And like, at that point, she was like, you know, what do you look for in a woman? And Riker kind of talked to her about, like, what he finds attractive in another person.
I like one who's intelligent and sure of herself. Who I can talk with and get something back. But the most important thing of all?
She got a great ass!
Soren is cool and fun and smart. Like, the woman that Riker describes as his type happens to be Soren.
Yeah.
Their interest in each other has not escaped the scrutiny of the people that Soren works with, right? Like, there's some go-to-commercial scenes where some associates of Soren sort of look askance at them. And yeah. One of those scenes happens at the end of the 10 forward scene where one of them walks in on a meeting pea soup and Soren, like, bolts up out of the chair a little she's defensively.
Like, she's like, yeah, I gotta go reorganize my sock drawer, so peace.
Yeah. I don't think Riker has done the pea soup form of seduction before. But it's cool. It's like a good way to get to know him. Like, you share the food you grew up with a romantic interest.
Right.
It's nice.
It would have been interesting to see what would have happened if Wesley and
the boy
tried that.
Pea soup is a very divisive soup, though. Like, I think you're really going out on a limb with that particular soup.
I guess it depends on the recipe, but
my wife, capital H, hates pea soup, but, like, homemade pea soup's awesome.
Next time you guys come to New York, I want to try a pea soup out on her, because there's a place literally half a block from my apartment that
are you hitting on my wife, Ben?
Serves a pea soup that is unbelievable.
I'm in. Like, real ham hock pea soup?
No, it's a Middle Eastern joint, so no pork products present.
Don't dig on swine.
Which is part of what's really astonishing about this pea soup being delicious.
Yeah, that would come as a surprise. I feel like the porkiness is a big part of my enjoyment.
And for the record, no, I'm not hitting on your wife, Adam. I just
boy,
want her,
that's
I
that's
just
gonna
want
be
her.
Clipped and abused, isn't it? That line.
It's one of my favorite drops. I've been systematically going back through past episodes and editing it in. There's also that really dreadful poker scene that we should probably talk about.
Yeah, we should.
The Doctor, Troy, Data, and Worf, and they are playing poker, and I think that this is probably intended to be a moment of levity in the episode, but Worf is presented as being such a ravenous misogynist that it's just, like, incredibly distracting.
Twos, sixes, and aces are wild.
That is a woman's game.
It's like, what the fuck is this even in here for? Like, why would you kneecap a character like that?
A man's game has no wild cards.
It feels like a room writing for a conflict instead of to a character.
Yeah.
Much in the same way that Riker had such, you know, out of left field feelings about assisted suicide in the last episode. Like, I feel like they knew that they had to have a conflict at the poker game. They knew they had to have someone be a misogynist, and they just gave it to Worf because they needed someone to carry that ball. Klingons are somewhat misogynist, but I don't feel like they're this misogynist.
I just, it's weird, right? Because, I mean, it's one of these scenes, and there have been dozens of them in the course of us reviewing this series, where I'm like, I don't want to believe this character thinks like this, so I choose not to. But it's fucking in the show, right? Like, so to some extent, it's canonical.
It's almost code of honor levels of shitty, you know?
It really is.
And, like, I don't know how you get that stink off of a character. Like, we're at the end of season 5, and now you're painting Worf with the misogynist brush, and it's not watercolor. Like, this is fucking acrylic.
Yeah. This does not clean off with a little bit of soap and water.
Right. You're not going to be able to wash the brush in Keiko's grandma's cup.
It is the guiding principle on which Darth Vader is based. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up and tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So the space MacGuffin has been solved, I guess, and they're getting the shuttle ready to go on this new mission. And I guess this time they're going to go into the space butthole and get the crew back from the missing ship.
Yeah, the first mission was like survey. The second mission is rescue.
Right.
Because it's sort of a race against time, right? We learned that this Janai shuttle, they know that it's running, but they're sort of running out of resources to keep the crew alive. Like right. they only have a certain number of days left.
I think this is maybe Geordi's only scene in the episode, and he walks in with a full beard.
What?
Yeah.
How did I miss this?
Scrub back through it, dude. Geordi is rocking full beard, like as much beard as Riker in this scene.
Whoa. God, like I just watched this episode. I don't know how I missed that part.
It's weird, right?
I like it.
I think he looks great. I think he looks better than normal. He looks great normally. He looks even better now.
I have a baseline level of beard envy just in general, like just in life. Mm-hmm. So I'm pro beard, mostly because my beard is an atrocity. And I'm forbidden from trying anymore.
Oh yeah, is that part of the prenup?
That is, I'm contractually obligated. I'm like a baseball player on the Cincinnati Reds. No beards.
I've had a beard in the past, and it's pretty divisive in my marriage as well.
You look great with a beard.
I don't have like thick enough beard hair to really pull it off, but it's like almost thick enough. It's really tempting for me to have a beard. Mm. But it's not quite. It's like Riker has like a nice full thick beard, and I have like kind of just enough patchiness that I wouldn't want anybody to look at it super closely.
I get about 4 days in for like the span of 4 or 5 days, and things get awkward in the house. Can't quite put my finger on it. Like attitudes change.
Yeah. Well, they go do their rescue. Goes great. There's like a moment of suspense when they try the transporter the first time and it doesn't work. But then they like, you know, reverse the polarity and patch the engines into the power system. They beam the unconscious Janai over to the shuttlecraft, and then the entrepreneur beams them out of the space butthole, which is, I guess they are now in a position where they're happy to burn a Previa, because I guess that means they've just left this nice new Prev in the null space, right?
I guess when you get into a new model year, they're more, you get more of them. They're more prolific.
Yeah.
They're more on the lot.
Right. So their resale value doesn't stay as good.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is a little sad. I kind of grew attached to that Previa.
Yeah. So they have like a little like reception to celebrate the, the success of the mission. And, Riker is down there, and he's kind of like having a little bit of a leaning wall moment out in the veranda of this party. And Soren comes out, and she's like, "Hey,
there you are, Commander. I wondered what had happened to our guest of honor.
You want to go do a little nature walk with me, and I'll show you some of the local flora and fauna, if you get my drift?
Maybe you can show me that great big stamen."
And Riker's like, "Yeah.
I've always been interested in exobotany.
As long as there's some husks to be seen."
We never see a husk, do we?
No, we never see a husk.
Let me ask you a question, Ben. If this is, what is it? What is this, 1994 right now? Like on the show?
Something like that.
Are you allowed to describe something that is used for sex and then show the thing later? Like by describing the husk as a sex device, are they disallowed from showing it?
Like standards and practices would look askance at them, including a husk shot?
Yeah, like I'm wondering if the husk shot is verboten.
I don't know.
Because I wanted to see that husk. Gotta be honest with you. Like as a child, I just thought it looked like corn. Because that's my only context for husks.
Right. Who knows, man? Who knows?
You cook your corn in the husk or you peel it first?
If I'm going on the grill, I'll usually leave the husk on to get some steaming action. Then I might pull it off and peel it back and get some browning.
See, I'm wondering what kind of peeling and browning the Janai do with this husk. I want to know all about it. And the thing is,
rub the corn with some butter and put some Parmesan and chili powder on there too.
Sounds real warm and nice.
Yeah.
Like Soren's asking all kinds of questions about human sexuality, and Riker learns about the husk. He knows about the husk, but he doesn't really go all the way with the husk in the questions. I think that's a missed opportunity. For both the viewer and for Will Riker.
Yeah. What isn't a missed opportunity is this nature walk scene, because Riker and Soren get, you know, just far enough into the forest to be out of earshot and viz from the party, and they start having a sweet, sweet makeout.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, it's Soren that sort of initiates, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Good for Soren. Like, in spite of the danger that she's described, the danger, I'm calling her she now because she's confided her gender truth to Riker. Like, she's down. She's down, and in spite of the many dangers, she's going for it.
Yeah.
She chooses love, Ben.
Yeah, love wins. So Riker gets back up to the ship, and he pays Deanna Troi a visit to let her know that he's met somebody, you know? I feel like this is like Imzadi courtesy.
Except Troi doesn't observe Imzadi courtesy when she's making out with Jason Schwartzman on the eugenics planet.
Maybe Riker carries a little bit more of a torch for Troi than vice versa.
It's a classy thing to do.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's totally necessary. I respect it.
Yeah. It's a typically valorous act for Riker William T, I would say.
It's a classy move by either party, I would say.
Yeah. I guess the deal is like, it is like right after this that he catches wind that Soren's been caught by the like gender police or whatever. They're like holding Soren in a trial. So Riker tries to like storm the trial and go like, no, like I did all of it, you know, Soren was an unwilling participant, and they're like, you know, your stance on consent is pretty well established in this court, sir, and we just don't buy
We've
that.
We've heard about you. Like, they just had first contact, and they knew about Riker's consent fetish even before he was on the scene.
Word gets around fast, you know?
Yeah.
That just doesn't ring true. And Soren is like, yeah, no, that's fucking bullshit. I was
like, the case law on Riker's consent fills volumes.
Yeah. Yeah. So Soren is like, I was having just as much fun as he was. And, I'm sick of living a lie, you know, like let's have a reckoning with this as a society. And they're like, well, instead of that, we're just going to, like, do our sadistic Mike Pence shit to you.
This part of the episode was really painful, like, because she does the hero shit. Like,
yeah.
She makes the case in a court. Her case is strong and good.
Right, and Riker's trying to say, like, don't Mike Pence her. Like, let her come to the Enterprise and, you know, we'll take her away. She's not going to bother you anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Mike Pences of the world, it's not actually about correcting something that they consider a problem. It's about controlling everybody, you know?
Right. Well, the Mike Pences of the world are never going to feel better about themselves by controlling other people. That's a hole you can't fill, Ben.
Mm. But if you try, you're going to want a flared base.
Which is why we recommend the Mike Pence model butt plug.
Oh, man. If we could get a Mike Pence butt plug in the Max Fun store, I would be so happy.
Yeah. It's got perfect white hair and dead eyes.
Soulless eyes, like a doll's eyes.
Doesn't seem to be living until he bites you.
And when that Mike Pence butt plug has you.
Those black eyes roll over white.
We're going to need a bigger boat, Adam.
200 Janai in the water. 30 Janai make it out.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that which longer nurses the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
Riker is stymied, and he goes back and he sits down with Picard in the ready room, and this is another Picard kind of trying to talk Riker into a prime directive type of reaction.
Yeah, two in a row. Two eps in a row.
Yeah. It's kind of a soft suggestion.
Like, yeah, he does that in a way where he's like, look, man, you can do what you feel like you need to do, and I will give you only as much cover as I can professionally.
Yeah.
But does not do the, like, he does not captain him into submission, you know?
Right. He's like, you know, like, please don't violate the prime directive, but if you got to, you got to.
Yeah, he doesn't have a heart of stone.
So Riker is, like, suiting up for this, like, clandestine assault, and Worf is like, yo, I heard there was going to be a clandestine assault. Can I get in on this?
Are you by any chance considering an unannounced visit?
Did you notice Worf's saltwater beach hair when he walked into Riker's quarters?
Oh, yeah, he had some beachy waves going.
He looked great.
Yeah, he looked like he'd been having some fun in the sun, Adam.
You want to rest up before a clandestine assault.
A warrior does not let a friend face danger alone.
Yeah, well, he was so exhausted after his uncharacteristically misogynistic tirade in the poker game that he decided to spend some time on the holodeck doing some boogie boarding, you know, shaking out that mane in the slow motion.
Nothing gets the misogyny out like a shore break.
Well, they go down to the planet's surface and they're like, they like essentially like beat the shit out of a couple of the Janai that are like taking Sorin around, and Riker,
this is
like
peak Star Trek fighting, right?
Yeah. Like,
punches and kicks and throws that just don't work in real life.
Yeah. And Riker like grabs her by the wrist and run off into the forest, and she's like, dude, like, you're too late. I have zero gender again. The treatment worked. And that's maybe the farthest sci-fi leap the show's taken yet. Because we know that shit doesn't work.
Yeah, we know that. And that's like part of the tragedy, right? Like, Riker put it all on the line to go and rescue her. And like, the outcome you want is for her to be rescued from the tower. And yeah. For Riker to save the princess.
It's a sad ending, and it's also like not an ending that I can give a full-throated endorsement of, because it does sort of depict conversion therapy as being like viable. And I know it's like sci-fi, but I don't like that it's ever, I'm not into it ever being implied that that's like a course that you can take.
This moment rang particularly true and painful to me personally, because maybe this has happened to you, but very early on in college, I had a relationship with a sweet Mormon girl.
Mm.
And we did some decidedly non-Mormon things together.
Yeah.
While she was on break from her Mormon school.
Yeah.
And once the summer was over, it was very sad that she had to go back. She was like, look, I think what we have is great. And I'm starting to feel less and less like a Mormon school is a place for me. So I'm going to go back to the Mormon school, and I'm going to transfer somewhere else, somewhere that's more in line with my current beliefs. And I was like, wow, that's great. Like, things are going great for us. Like, I really enjoy being with you. This has been an awesome summer. This isn't going to be a summer fling, right?
Right.
So she goes off to school, and like that thing happens, Ben, where like the phone calls stop, and like a week or two goes by, and the signs aren't looking good. Finally get her on the phone, and she's like, I had a change of heart. I came back to school and I was among the Mormons again, and like I talked to my preacher figure here, and he told me that I was a very bad person and what we did was wrong and bad, and I regret every moment of it.
Wow.
And don't plan on me changing my life for you. I'm going to stay out here and do Mormon things. It's over. And that's how I was broken up with.
Dang.
And that felt not exactly like this, Ben, but the idea of a sort of programming, being the barrier to a relationship is extremely painful because you feel like it's out of your hands.
Yeah. And you feel like the bad guys won.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it felt like here.
Yeah. Uncharacteristically dour ending to an episode. And like Riker goes back up on the bridge and Picard's like,
is our business with the Janai finished?
And Riker's like, yeah, we can go.
He uses that language that is sort of coded, right? Where only the two people know what they're actually talking about, but
right.
For all intents, like the rest of the bridge crew is oblivious. That was a classy move by Picard.
Yeah.
Like to make sure before leaving.
Yeah, it was a like friendlier thing than he usually does, you know, to keep his captainly distance.
For someone who hasn't had a great experience with romantic relationships, like Picard understands them and other people.
Yeah.
Like he gets how things work. And I thought it was big of him to give Riker some harbor.
True dat. Did you like this episode, Adam?
Yeah, I did. It seems ahead of its time in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
in some ways it still is. It's still very much not ahead of its time. It's sadly contemporary.
It steps on a couple of rakes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I felt the same way, and I feel like one thing that was particularly sad at the end was just thinking about how so much has been accomplished for gay rights that, you know, now we're looking at the same fight for trans rights, and it like feels like we are back to square one.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode like newly speaks to that fight. And that is really discouraging, you know, like I just wish that, and they make the argument in this episode, like it doesn't fucking injure you at all that she wants to be a she and not a they. And like, there's no reason for you to have a fucking court hearing over it. Like, get over yourselves. Like, it doesn't fucking matter to you, or it
that
shouldn't matter to you.
That point was articulated really well. The show did a great job with that.
And it's something that I wish like our culture could just like incorporate. And it seems so hard for some people to like stay out of other people's business.
Yeah, and an episode like this really, it brings to the fore an issue that a lot of people have to make the main part of their life. And the challenges associated with that are innumerable and sad. And I'm sorry it's like that for so many people.
Yeah. Adam, on a lighter note, I see that we have a indicator light that may or may not mean there are Priority One messages waiting for us on the other side of this delightful drop.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben.
Adam.
We have a personal Priority One message. Gang style message. It is from many people to one person. It is from Ryan, Heather, Tachikoma, Cassette, Bonnie, and Clyde.
the legendary robbers?
Yes, and it is for Ross. The message goes like this: we used to be adversaries. You were the tomahawk to my Picard, the standard issue door to my Worf. the Keiko to my Miles. But over time, we bonded over many things, including TNG and 3,200 baud modems.
Now we're the
best of friends. You know, you go through those modem wars with people. You come out on the other side.
I was always friends. A 14-4 man.
Yeah. You are the Geordi to my Data, the Loxana to my Mr. Hom, the Wesley to my Traveler. No offense. Happy birthday, brother.
Wow.
The references are getting more exotic.
Yeah.
More specific. More razor sharp, Ben.
I think that at a certain point, we may not be able to keep up with the references. Even us.
That was a great message by a lot of people. I don't know how you can get that many people to agree on a single message.
Yeah.
Of course, when you're the Borgs, you don't have that problem.
Maybe this is a fledgling collective.
We can only hope. We can only hope that Ross gets assimilated. Pronto.
Adam, we have another message here, and it's from Katie, and it's to Jesse. Happy birthday to a husband who is as smart as Picard, as great a dad as Sisko, as studly as Kirk. I've loved you since our first argument about Wesley Crusher 20 years ago. Fun fact, you are now the same age as Brent Spiner when he began playing Data. That's a good age.
That's some trivia right there.
Yeah. I think that the bulk of our business in Priority Ones is in celebrating people's birthdays, and that feels great.
It truly does. Marking the passage of time with our whiny nasal voices. What could be better?
Yeah, I think the only way to punctuate another trip around the sun is with two dorkazoids from the internet who spend entirely too much time thinking about Star Trek.
It is so much better to do a P1 than a Benjamin R. Harrison shaped sheet cake. Yeah. Anatomically correct.
Yeah, so minty.
Yeah, well, if you don't have the cash for a cake and instead want to allocate those resources to Priority One messages, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where you can turn your group message into a message delivered by me and or Ben.
To thousands of listeners.
Personal messages, especially with the birthday variety, are $100. Commercial messages are for $200, and they help the ongoing production of our show. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Do you have a minty fresh drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
My drunk Shimoda is decidedly not fresh in this episode, Adam. Very occasionally, we give drunk Shimodas to entire scenes. And I think that the poker scene in this episode has got to be my Shimoda. It is so unfortunate that this scene is in the episode, I think.
It is. I feel bad preemptively laughing.
It's just, it is cruel to characters who I think shouldn't be characterized in this way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like sometimes we complain about an episode or to where suddenly the writers are writing the senior staff as dumb.
Yeah.
We really don't like that. And I think that I have an equally bad reaction when they write them as ignorant. You know?
Yeah.
Like, there's no fucking way Worf thinks this way. There just isn't.
Yeah.
Based on all of the past episodes, like, I completely agree with you that he's probably more misogynistic than any other character, but the brand of misogyny that they depict him as having in this is really off the mark, in my opinion.
Yeah, they use him as a utility to further the story, to present a counterpoint in the conversation, and it's like I just wish they were more careful like yeah. that. Like, this shit has consequences.
Yeah.
Like, now this is a thing with Worf, and you don't unstink him from this easily. Yeah. And it's just like out of nowhere. Like,
yeah.
Like, they aren't even talking about this, really, and Worf forces the conversation.
Yeah. He says a super sexist thing to Troy, which is just, like, so uncalled for.
You arguably don't even need the scene.
Yeah.
Really.
You don't.
Because the stakes are so high. Like, you risk ruining Worf with shit like this for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I picked a fun Shimoda, Ben.
Yay.
Just to play off of yours a little bit. There's a scene where Soren and Riker are sort of rooting around in the shuttle, and they like pull off a panel and they're dicking around with the wiring inside.
Uh-huh.
I think Riker references something like a starboard manhole thruster. Ben, I don't know what that is. Except innuendo. And yeah. I'm choosing to believe that innuendo is the universal language. Like, these are aliens unfamiliar with each other's ways. You know, Soren is sort of probing around Riker's sexuality and figuring out how humans do it. I feel like Riker just might have tossed that one out there to see if that one lands in the room. Like,
yeah.
Somehow we'll do that to each other on the show. We'll, like, we'll tease a joke out to see if the other person's going to pick it up. And I'm wondering if Riker isn't doing it in that scene. Like, did you hear what I just said? So I don't believe that the starboard manhole thruster is a part. I think that's a joke.
Yeah.
So I'm giving it to Riker.
Nice.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait. And I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS, and with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start, and these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class.
tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben? Is it a very special episode of Star Trek The Next Generation?
The next episode is Season 5, Episode 18, Cause and Effect. The entrepreneur is trapped in a time warp that forces the crew to endlessly repeat the same experiences. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
This is one of my favorite episodes of the entire series. I like this episode more than some movies.
Do you like it more than the Tom Cruise movie, Live, Die, Repeat?
I really like that movie.
AKA Edge of Tomorrow?
I liked that movie more when it was called Edge of Tomorrow. I think that race to the lowest common denominator on titles is fucking bullshit.
Yeah, they totally
keep
turned
the
title into a hashtag, didn't they?
Yeah, that was dumb. That made me feel bad. I like that movie, and I like this episode.
Yeah. I think they both succeed, if memory serves, at showing an event happening over and over again, and yet it doesn't get boring to see it again.
Yeah. I mean, we'll save a bunch of this for the next episode, but the cold open into theme is one of the best. Like, it shocks a 10-year-old to see what happens in that first 10 minutes.
Yeah. Well, that's
can't
our
wait
next
to see
episode.
It.
Yeah, I can't wait either. I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. One thing that we repeat over and over again, Ben, is this show. And more specifically, its conclusion. If you have something to say about this or any other episode, you can chat us up on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CutForTime. Ben is there as @BenjaminR, AHR.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea, who is always Johnny on the spot with new music. Whenever we come up with some cockamamie idea for a new segment, he is like reliably there with a track to layer in. Really makes my day every time.
Or maybe one of the hosts blows their audio and needs needs him to fix it. Yeah. He's there for that too. He's
one
great. He's like the third Beatle.
Totally like the third Beatle.
Is the third Beatle Ringo?
No, come on. He's obviously the fourth Beatle.
Everyone says that. I don't believe it.
Who else would be the fourth Beatle? I don't even care about the Beatles, and it's obvious to me that he's the fourth Beatle.
I think it's Paul. I'm just going to say that.
Whoa, shots fired.
You can send your letters to Jesse Thorne. Resident music expert.
It's a good thing that Merlin Mann and John Roderick don't listen to this program, Adam, because I feel like they would spend an entire episode of Roderick on the Line talking about what idiots we are.
I'm not so sure they don't already do that, Ben. The show is not exactly held in high regard by one John Roderick.
No.
Though Merlin Mann is a friend of the show. We are smeared all over Reddit in a number of areas. There's r/greatestgen. There's also the Maximum Fun Reddit, where people discuss our page. Where people discuss our show over there.
I recommend using baking soda and peroxide. That'll buff right out.
Or a jar full of water for your brushes.
We're also on Facebook, and that's also a really lively community. And if you check out the hashtag GreatestGen, there's a Twitter user named WDW Plantoons, Plantoons, who has been, over the last few months, has made like three or four animations of chunks from our show featuring like photoshopped stuff we are describing. And he or she, I don't know if it's a... I don't know where this person lies on the gender spectrum, but they released a little animation of Bat Trek today that is really fun. So
I haven't seen it yet. I'll check it out.
I highly recommend you go look for that.
Bat Trek.
Yeah.
All right.
With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Was not expecting a Jaws reference this episode, Ben.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.